This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? Happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The string of summer-like weather continues. I'm not complaining. I'm enjoying it. Absolutely gorgeous. Did a long walk with my dog yesterday all around the lakefront. Just amazing. And of course, I was hanging out because it was my mom's birthday. So happy birthday to Shirley. She's out there listening, no doubt. Good fun, that. Hope you all had a really good weekend. We got a great show planned for you today. Remember, you can always watch the shows live on YouTube, which is a bunch of fun. Again, I do not have a poker face. Not a thing for me. So if you want to see my hair on fire facial expressions, you can always watch the show on YouTube. We also stream on Facebook and Instagram. You can find our YouTube channel is Civic Media on YouTube, and you can check the show out on all of the socials, Insta, Facebook, and X, at Maggie Dawn Show. So please do that. I like a little participation, a little feedback. That's always fun. And then today we've got a whole array of fabulous guests. On Mondays at 2:30, I am joined by the Center for American Progress's Action Fund. Today, we've got a guest joining us. His name is Michael Sozon, and he really focuses on democracy and the institutions of our government. He's going to join us today. That will be an interesting discussion, certainly as Donald Trump's rhetoric continues to amp up. As we are now, let's see, got to check my president election countdown clock. 14 days, 10 hours, 51 minutes, and now 23 seconds away from official balloting. At 3 o'clock, of course, we got Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. We're going to be joined by George Gala. He is the founder of a nonprofit called Addition, which is a worker advocacy organization. So looking forward to talking with George. And of course, because it's Monday and it is time for In Case You Missed It with Dom Salvia, he's going to join me at 3:30. So all of that looking to be a lot of fun this afternoon. Calvin, my friend, is joining me on the boards. Calvin, part of the Maggie Dawn production team. Thanks so much, Cal. Always appreciate your work. How was your weekend, my friend?
It was pretty good. I actually had off on Thursday and Friday with the studio move.
Excellent.
So had a long weekend and I'm doing well.
Well, I am certainly glad to have you. And yes, folks, if you didn't know, we've been doing a little rearranging of the furniture, if you will, here at Civic Media. All of the political talkers now, except for Todd Albo, who continues to broadcast from Madison and Richland Center, all of the rest of us, we now are joining our Racine neighbors at the WRJN station to do our talk broadcast. So that's exciting. Always fun to just get a mind reset in a new physical space. I enjoy that. Certainly looking forward to all this good stuff, all the newness here at WRJN. We love our downtown Waukesha location, though you can usually find one of us hanging out at the farmers markets in downtown Waukesha on Saturdays. But folks, here's where I wanted to start today. I read this article. Let's see, I believe I read it on Friday, and it really got under my skin, big time. And It was a piece, a guest opinion piece written for the New York Times by a guy by the name of Neil Katyal. Now, if you're a real political junkie, you may hear his name and think this sounds familiar. Neil Katyal is currently a professor of law at Georgetown University, but he worked for many years in the Solicitor General's office. And this guy is really, really smart. And so when I saw this opinion piece and that it was written by him, I thought, I've got to read that. And the title pretty much tells you what it's all about. The line is this, the headline is this: in case of an election crisis, this is what you need to know. And having been the person that was the lead legal advisor to the Milwaukee County Elections Commission during the 2020 recount, I was fascinated because I think a lot of the tactics that were deployed by the Trump campaign in 2020 to basically throw out valid votes and then slow down the votes so that deadlines that were enshrined in state law would be blown, therefore throwing the slate of electors into question, we're seeing a lot of indications that similar tactics will be and are being used in this election cycle. So I jumped in. Now, I'm going to share with you the observations made by Attorney Katyal, but I also highly recommend that you go read it. So we're going to put the link to the article in the show chat today. And Calvin, I'll send that to you before we're done this afternoon. But I want to take us all through it because the portrait that it paints is so deeply terrifying. And the clarity with which Neil shares these threats, these concerns that he has, is remarkable. I think a lot of lawyers, we over wordsmith things. You know what I'm saying, Cal? A little bit over talk the point a little bit. And I do say that with a bit of irony that of course, here I am talking with each and every one of you. But let's jump into Neil's article here. Again, this is the New York Times, published on October 16th. The title is, in case of an election crisis, this is what you need to know. And he starts with this observation. In 2020, when the Trump campaign questioned the results of the election and when Donald Trump started to spread the big lie, the courts nearly universally, in all but just a small handful of cases where the victories for on the side of the Trump campaign were very de minimis, non-substantive, had no ultimate impact on the election, the courts just rejected case after case after case after case. There were, I think, we had a state law-based case that went up to our state Supreme Court here in the state of Wisconsin. We also had one in federal court, numerous claims. All of them, Donald Trump lost. But in 2024, Neil starts out by pointing out the fact that we should not be looking to the judiciary alone to save democracy. That if you're thinking about, well, maybe I'm going to sit this one out. Maybe I'm going to do the old third party conscientious objector vote, or I'm not going to vote at all because you think, oh, of course, the law, the judicial branch, that'll save us. That'll sort it all out. Neil's pointing out here, for a number of reasons, that is not going to be the case. And the first warning that he notes, and I've said this a number of times, is that they are no longer amateurs. Those that seek to disenfranchise voters from the Republican side of the political spectrum aren't amateurs about how to do this, how to attempt to basically tell voters that your votes don't count anymore, that, you know, the state legislature will just decide for whom our state's electors will be cast. Or, hey, just judges, they'll decide for whom the state's electors should, their votes should be cast. And this is quite, quite scary. Here's what Neil Katyal writes. Again, this is from October 16th. He writes this, quote, "The rogues are no longer amateurs. They have spent the last 4 years going pro, meticulously devising a strategy across multiple fronts, state legislatures, Congress, executive branches, and elected judges to overturn any close election." And that is indeed the point. We know that this is happening already because right now, coast to coast, there are upwards of 100 plus lawsuits. Some put the number north of 200, but there is just an incredible volume of litigation that is already occurring in the courts. For example, in Pennsylvania, there's litigation over whether undated mail-in ballots are permissible. Why wouldn't they be? I mean, if you have the ballot before, you know, the count is done, why wouldn't you count that? Well, again, Republicans trying to tamp down likely Democratic votes in Pennsylvania by bringing this case. Case in Pennsylvania also separately about whether provisional ballots can be allowed. Wow. Stephen Miller, a Trump campaign advisor, you know, the guy that looks like the Walking Dead, the crafter of the family separation policy under the Trump administration. Yeah, that guy, he's brought suit in Arizona claiming that judges should just be able to throw out election results. And all of this litigation is in part occurring as part of a deliberate and intentional strategy to disenfranchise voters or to place the outcome of the election in the hands of someone other than a state's voters, namely a legislature or a friendly judge. But here's why there's so much more legislation litigation than we've seen in past years. And it's because in many states and local counties, in response to Donald Trump's continuous avalanche of lies and frankly, his apologist lies about the 2020 election, a lot of states and a lot of local counties changed their voting laws. They changed the very process of how they conduct voting. And what's important about that is when you change the law, well, that's now a new law. And it can be subject to all kinds of legal challenges and interpretive difficulties. And some of these laws are affirmatively vague and basically invent chaos. All of this not good. We're going to continue this discussion about what former Solicitor General, current Georgetown Law Professor Neil Katyal says we can likely expect some level of election shenanigans from Trump and his co-conspirators following November 5th this year. So keep it locked. Of course, we got the Center for American Progress coming in at 2:30. We're going to talk more about democracy then. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking about an article, an opinion piece by Neil Katyal. It was published in the New York Times just last week. The reason that we're talking about it is because it scared the bejiggers out of me. He's basically contrasting where we were in 2020 to where we are today in terms of the potential for an electoral crisis. In other words, so much doubt or suspicion thrown into the actual presidential election process that we could be faced with a constitutional crisis. Now, Neil Katyal, particularly well-suited to be the guy that talks to us about all of this, former Solicitor General, professor of law at Georgetown University Law School, he's argued before the Supreme Court I think somewhere north of 80 times. So yeah, the guy knows what he is talking about. And we left off where I was sharing with you that there are already 100 plus lawsuits going through the courts, both at the state and federal level. And of course, you know, in the past, and certainly the recount cases from 2020 that occurred in the state of Wisconsin, a Trump judge, a Trump appointed judge, heard of those cases and rejected the claims. And I have a lot of faith in the federal judiciary. But there are 1,200 federal court judges. And now, generally speaking, federal court judges are supposed to be more independent because under Article 3 of the Constitution, they're appointed for a lifetime. So the thinking was always, well, these would be less political judges. Well, our experience would tell us that that is not universally true. So we know that some of these cases are going to be proceeding in the federal courts. We know Donald Trump stacked the courts. And so all it takes is maybe one or two federal judges out of the 1,200 of them who maybe put politics above principle, right? Or personal ambition above the good of the country, and act in a political way and plunge us all into some sort of deep electoral confusion. And of course, there's the old Supreme Court. Not really a confidence-inspiring group of people these days, are they? And that's just category number one of the problems. So I'm going to just put it the lawsuit bundle of problems with the judges' trouble. And I don't even need to get into state level judges, because in many states, they are very, very partisan. So then we look at category two that Professor Katyal pointed out, and he talks about state official and local election boards. Like, for example, we got the Wisconsin Election Commission here in the state. Each county has an election commission. And he points out that these state officials and local election boards can also create all kinds of chaos simply by refusing to certify elections if that's their role. And of course, this time around, because of the changes in state laws, especially in deep red states, that have made elections easier to challenge, have thrown, I think, a lot of issues into gray area that invite this sort of chaos, they've got more justifications for perhaps, you know, throwing out the will of the voters and letting someone else decide. A good example of this is that new election law in Georgia that empowers local election boards to investigate voter fraud. It doesn't really require any sort of standard of proof to begin such an investigation. It just says that they can do this. Now, that sounds maybe like a good thing, but what does that really mean? It means that a local election board can potentially say, oh, well, we think there's voter fraud, so maybe we won't certify the votes. Now, again, there's litigation going on in Georgia about this. There's been some favorable rulings, but all of it is problematic, especially taken as a whole. Now, in 2022, Congress passed the Election Count Reform and Presidential Transition Improvement Act, which tried to clean up some of these problems. But again, at the end of the day, you have people in these public roles, public officials, that have to choose to do the right thing. At the end of the day, that is what much of this relies on. Of course, third is a category of problem that we know lots about here in the state of Wisconsin, and it's those partisan state legislatures. Wisconsin's gerrymandered beyond all recognition. And legislatures that are gerrymandered and deeply red may have some incentives to muck about with the certification if they have a role in that, or to maybe give some airtime to totally stupid, baseless conspiracy theories about voter fraud. And then again, maybe try to interfere to get like a different, completely fictional slate of electors appointed and handed off to your Wisconsin Senator Johnson. And the worst thing is, if we end up in electoral vote tie for any number of these reasons, the House decides. Yikes. So this is not good. Again, Congress has tried to improve this with this 2022 law, but the rules are extremely complex. The new rules and procedures for the actual certification of the electors that happens in Congress, you know, the thing that led to January 6th. Again, the 2022 law, very complicated. Anytime you see this sort of complexity, you can end up in what? Litigation. There can be uncertainty. It's not been used before, all of these things. So when we take all of that together, here's what Neil Katyal writes. The stark reality is that there are no immediate solutions to a potential election crisis. The personnel to trigger one in the courts, the legislatures, and the executive branches of government are largely in place. And that is why an overwhelming victory in the presidential race and supporting congressional candidates that support democracy is absolutely essential on November 5th. Early voting starts in the state of Wisconsin tomorrow. Civic Media's got you covered. When we come back, I'll tell you about our election special, and we'll be joined by Michael Sozon, Senior Fellow for Democracy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll talk more about democracy after these brief messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com. I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains. You know I love it when the music. What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back.
Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow, early voting begins in Wisconsin, and Civic Media's got you covered. First, on my show, I'm going to go through all the mechanics, all of the logistical Q&As that you and your friends and family may have about how to vote. Is it better to drop my ballot off if I got an absentee ballot or mail it in? When should I mail it in by? What happens if my signature forget to put it on the mail-in ballot? All of these things and more. I will talk about it tomorrow in my show along with a couple of special guests. And then I'm joining our political editor, Dan Schaefer, for a special Know Your Vote show tomorrow night from 6 to 7 o'clock. I'll go through all of this again with Dan. So mark your calendars, get your pens and pencils ready. We'll dump all kinds of useful information on you so that you can make sure your vote counts in this once-in-a-generation election. Because democracy is at stake, and I'm so very happy to have my next special guest joining the Maggie Dawn Show today. His name is Michael Sozon. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He was formerly Chief of Staff to U.S. Senator Mark Udall, Legislative Director for Senator Jim Webb, Counsel for former Senator Bill Nelson. He's been an attorney for the DOJ and for the FCC. I'll call you next time, Mike, when I'm wondering if we're FCC compliant here on this station. Thanks so much for making time. Where do you rate this election on the things could go really badly if we reach the wrong outcome here meter?
Well, thanks for having me on, Maggie. There are a lot of concerns. I try to stay optimistic, but we know there's a track record here of Donald Trump and his and the MAGA movement. We know that there are lots of different parts of the system that can be exploited. I think luckily Congress acted in a bipartisan fashion recently when it updated the statute that oversees how the electoral counts are voted by Congress. That's what was being done last January 6th at the time of the insurrection. So it'll be a lot harder for that part to be disrupted, but there are still other parts that can be disrupted, especially in the states when they're moving towards certification of the votes in the states by the governors. And also, I'll just say, obviously, I think we're all troubled by the amount of disinformation floating around about elections and of the amount of political violence and threats of violence that are just becoming more commonplace. And the permission structure that, unfortunately, a lot of our political leaders give to Americans to engage in that sort of dangerous rhetoric.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard the words permission structure so many times as I have in the lead up to this election, both from what I'm going to call the scary end of that stick. And that is folks who used to be, you know, proudly of a party that supported law and order and stood for the rule of law, at least nominally speaking, finding their way to basically act in an extra legal, meaning illegal way to raise all kinds of bogus questions about the election process. And the last thing, just before you came on, Mike, we were talking about that 2022 law that Congress passed to help clarify and put some guardrails around the electoral count itself once it gets to Congress. But as I was discussing Professor Katyal's article with the audience today, you know, he points out and he leans on the very thing that you mentioned, the fact that there have been in mostly red-controlled or deep red states, changes made to the voting laws that operate the governance of elections within the states. And that every time, and he points this out in a really nonpartisan way, just anytime you change laws, that then raises, okay, well, how is this interpreted? How is it applied? And that gives additional fodder. And you couple that with the reality that there have been explicit people that have run for local offices that both directly impact the processing of elections or indirectly could potentially do so, that have fully bought and are fully committed to the big lie, to these conspiracy theories. It's a challenging time. When we think about that for a state like Wisconsin, what should voters be looking at when they look at their congressional candidates that are running, when they're looking at who may be on their state ballots? Because Professor Katyal points to that as almost, if not more important than the presidential vote.
Right. It's so important in this election for your listeners, for all voters, to be so attuned to what their candidates stand for at the local, state, and federal level, especially in this area of democracy. And of course, there are lots of candidates running who still are spreading disinformation and are still essentially election denialists and are trying to sow distrust in the election. And Wisconsin runs very good elections. Yes. And the processes are very clear on what needs to happen. And the certification processes can be trusted. And that's one thing I hope that Wisconsinites really take away from all of this and from your coverage, is that they should vote and their vote will be counted as cast. And the system is generally very trustworthy. And the chances of any sort of widespread voter fraud is very small. But they really do need to be attuned to what candidates say about the process and hopefully take that into account one way or the other when they cast their votes. And you're right that there are more and more local and state officials, especially on election boards, who have some role in the certification process, that are perhaps election denialists. And that's not a good thing. And we also saw, I'm sure you've talked about this, what happened in Georgia, where some hardcore Republicans were elected to the state election board and now control it and have been passing rule after rule after rule to make it harder for the certification process to go forward, to really reflect the will of the people. And the state courts are having to intervene now. And even the Republican Secretary of State there disagrees with those rules changes. I mean, so these are the sort of things that everybody needs to stay really attuned to. And hopefully between all of us really staying attuned, really demanding the right things from our officials, hopefully with the courts intervening when it needed, when they need to, the system will hold up.
Yeah, that is, it's sort of our best bet is in one, respecting the institutions, respecting the processes, standing for the rule of law, and supporting candidates as voters that stand by the rule of law. Folks, my special guest this half hour for this Monday check-in with the Center for American Progress Action Fund is their Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy, Mike Sozin. You have worked in many crucial roles, both as a direct advisor to elected officials, but also as a subject matter expert within the executive branch departments. One of the things that I often try to share with everybody that's listening, all of you out there, is I've worked in government for a long time, and by far the overwhelming approach from virtually every single person I ever encountered in government were people there just trying to do their jobs well, to do it objectively. It was very unusual that I saw someone bringing a personal political agenda to jobs that were civil servant based jobs and were needed those jobs to be done objectively and independently and without favor or fear. Is that your experience as well? Can you just speak to that a little bit, Mike? Because I feel like there's such government employees get such a bad rap and we're assumed to all be these highly partisan actors. And it's like, that was the opposite of my experience entirely. And I clerked for a federal appeals court judge who was a two-time Reagan appointee. We never talked about it.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. I worked in both, for the Department of Justice and for the Federal Communications Commission, which is a truly independent agency. And the civil servants at both of those places are so dedicated to just doing the right thing. I mean, as a civil servant working for the federal government, you actually have to take an oath to uphold the law and the Constitution when you start your job, and people take great pride in it. Sure. Civil servants might have political leanings one way or the other. I mean, they're people just like you and me, just like yes. We all are. We have political leanings, but we have to put those aside when we do our jobs, which is to help implement and make sure that the law is implemented in a neutral way that keeps Americans safe, protected, whatever the civil servant's job is. And that's one thing that really worries me, is that when we have a political candidate and a Project 2025 that are going to try to weaken the independence of agencies and are going to try to clear out the civil servants and replace them with political loyalists, that's really dangerous, because our civil service is based on this notion that these dedicated career people who are actually in many times could make a lot more money in the private sector are just trying to do the right thing for the public interest.
Yeah, it's up and down sort of federal employment ranks, right? It's not just, they're not just talking about replacing people arguably that have leadership roles that maybe should have a reflection of a president's policy agenda as a partisan. They're not talking about that. The proposal in Project 2025 is getting down to levels of governmental service workers that are protected civil servants and just removing the civil service protections. And I will tell everybody that's listening, and Mike, I'll ask you to chime in too. I have seen partisans in roles that were explicitly partisan roles through the appointment process. They have limited usefulness, and in fact, I don't think are particularly helpful in getting the nuts and bolts of government functioning done. That's why they're not political appointees fireable at will by the elected chief executive. You need people that aren't subject to the whims of an elected official to ensure the continuity of government. And of course, we should always be looking at efficiency and improving accountability. But the solution is not a bunch of political hacks. It's sort of antithetical to the objective that I think we all wish to see more of.
That's right. That's why I think the average American should be and is alarmed when they learn about this sort of tactic, because it really goes against our American values, at least in recent decades, as the civil service has been improved and strengthened. And yeah, look, we all agree that no matter whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, get a certain number of slots that they can fill in all of the agencies under the administration's control. Not in the truly independent agencies, but at the Department of Justice, for example. Of course, a president should be able to have some political appointees there, and those political appointees can help steer the general ship in terms of implementing a president's agenda. But you're right that the civil servants are there. They're the ones with deep expertise. They help to advise the politicals on what can and can't be done. And they're there to make sure that the public interest is being acted in. And luckily, they're there as guardrails. And that's actually good for the American people.
Folks, that's Mike Sozan. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I want us to take a listen to this, Mike, because J.D. Vance finally told us what we all knew his viewpoint about certifying the electors back on January 6th, what he would have done had he been in the position of Mike Pence. Let's take a listen, Kel. This is Cut 7.
He was asked to not certify it.
Sure.
So would you have certified? I'll ask you for the third.
Again, I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors and let the country have the debate about what actually matters and what kind of an election that we had.
You wouldn't have certified states. To be clear.
I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors. I think that's what I would have done. Again, I've said that publicly many times.
So shocking. My special guest, Mike Sozan, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to dig into that clip when we come back, Mike, because it's for all the marbles, folks. Democracy matters. Your vote is what helps protect it. More here on the Maggie Dawn Show after these brief messages on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin, welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Monday at 2:30, I'm joined by a big thinker, a friend of the show and now a friend of yours from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today is no exception, joined by Mike Sozan. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy. He's been Chief of Staff to a senator, a legislative director for a different senator, counsel to another senator. He's worked at the DOJ and the FCC. He is an expert on democracy, and the stakes are certainly high for our democracy in this very next election. Early voting starts tomorrow. Thank goodness. I cannot wait to get my ballot cast. Want to get it done with, Mike, because I just want to know it is in the bag. I will be voting tomorrow myself. But before the break, and we're going to play it again, I played for everybody, for each and every one of you, and for you as well, Mike. J.D. Vance, just about a week and a half ago, finally getting pressed for a clear answer on what he would have done on January 6th. And his answer is, I would have violated my constitutional oath and refused to certify the slate of electors. Calvin, let's take a listen one last time.
He was asked to not certify it.
Sure.
So would you have certified? I'll ask you for the third.
Again, I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors and let the country have the debate about what actually matters and what kind of an election that we had.
So you wouldn't have certified states. To be clear.
I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors. I think that's what I would have done. Again, I've said that publicly many times.
Mike, there's so much in there. It's such a short clip, and yet there's so much in there that's just stunning. Your reactions.
It is stunning, and it's emblematic of why our nation is in this troubling political chapter we're in right now. I mean, we are a nation that is supposed to have commonly held values, accountability to the rule of law, and political norms that are meant to get us through a lot of tough situations, but really bind us together and keep our republic going. And here you have a candidate for vice president and a sitting senator really breaking a major, major norm and the Constitution. But this is the peaceful transfer of presidential power that's always happened in our nation's history, 250 years. This was the first time, January 6th, 4 years ago almost, where one of the presidential candidates tried to block that peaceful transfer of power. And it is shocking. It really should be unacceptable to us all. I mean, you remember there was actually back in 2000 when during the Bush versus Gore race, when Gore really, you know, he ended up having the Supreme Court of the United States decide the election and hand it to George W. Bush. Al Gore was the sitting vice president at the time and had to preside over the electoral count, basically the January 6th of that year. I can't remember which date it was.
Yeah, nor can I, but yes, but he had to do that job. Yeah,
he had to do it, and he handed over power to the Republicans because that was just the political norm. It's what the Constitution called. It was what the Constitution called for, and it was the right thing to do. It reflected the will of the American people as determined in part by the Supreme Court. So the fact that we are so far removed from that now, and that we have a major candidate just proudly saying that he would ignore that, the will of the people, is again emblematic of why we're in this really tough situation. And hopefully we're going to turn the page on this tough situation soon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I just, in response to some of the things that Senator Vance said in that clip, let's be clear, everyone. While it certainly has the veneer of reasonability to say, oh, well, let's have a discussion about what's really important in elections. Yeah, JD, you have that before people vote. That's called the campaigning period. And then you count all the votes and they need to count. And that is the outcome. That is the discussion. It is in the voting. Just the rhetoric and the sort of normalizing, or the sane washing, if you will, another buzzword of our time, is shocking. I want to just respond to a couple quick questions we've gotten on the text line. Michaela from West Bend asked, what action can or should someone take if an employer denies them the time off to vote? Here in the state of Wisconsin, your employer is required to give you up to 3 hours to vote on election day. 3 hours. No matter the size of the employer, you get 3 hours to go vote if you want to do that on election day. If you don't live in the state of Wisconsin and you're wondering, you can call up your local boards of elections. It's usually a quick Google away. So anybody, if you've got a question about that, go check it out. But of course, make a plan to vote when you don't have to be at work. Vote early if you can. Get it taken care of. Mike, as we're coming up on the end of our time together, what are some of the things? I mean, Donald Trump's rhetoric, I hate repeating it, right? Calling for the military to be dispatched on his political enemies, calling out the Pelosi's by name, Adam Schiff, falsely claiming that CBS had given the vice president the questions ahead of the debate, calling for their FCC license to be yanked, all of which totally untrue. Talking about the enemy within, most recently doubling down on those comments a number of times. What do you want Wisconsin voters to know? Talk to each of the people listening out there today.
Yeah, Maggie, you did a really good job setting out just some of the more recent things that Donald Trump has said. And what I would just say to Wisconsinites is, really just do your homework, check your own values and your own value system. And I think most people are supportive of a true democracy, not supportive of authoritarianism. We all want to get to be able to get along as a community, to be able to solve problems in a civil way through the ballot box, reject political violence, and support candidates who you think are best aligned with those sorts of American values.
Thanks so much, Mike Sozin, the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thank you for your service as a public servant to each and every one of us and democracy. Maggie and the Millionaires is coming up next. I've got George Gala joining me, the founder of Additional Worker Advocacy Group. Don't miss it here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.